This interview is brought to you by Panasonic Lumix G cameras for today's photographer. All right, I'm here with a good friend of mine. His name is Mr. Jeremy Cowart. He's a Nashville-based, and I wrote it down here so I don't mess it up. He's an entertainment, music, and celebrity photographer, which is, you know, kind of one of those careers that or career paths that a lot of photographers aspire to do. You know, they want to get to the level where they're rubbing shoulders with celebrity photographers and taking their images and, you know, kind of be known as one of the gang in those circles. So I'm going to talk about that stuff and a whole lot more with Jeremy. So, Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, man. It's good to be here. It's been a while.
I know. I feel like, you know, the years fly by. I feel like we're on the downhill slope now, you know, with no brakes. But this is good. It's good. I know you're insanely busy. You were just here a couple days ago in the Bay Area doing some stuff, and I saw you over there. Congratulations on being appointed to be one of the seven. I think you were the top of the list of the most influential photographers socially in the United States or world or something, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, honestly, I was shocked because, you know, I don't know, it just seems like guys like Trey Ratcliffe and Scott Kelby and Chase, it seems like they own the internet. Like every time, you know, one of them posts something on the internet, like the internet explodes, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely surprised that all the algorithms and research kind of put me at the top. So
yeah,
super honored and you know, excited to figure out how to continue to be a good steward of that.
So. Yeah. I mean, I think the way to continue doing is just keep doing what you're doing, right? Which is,
yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to talk about, a lot of this stuff. So you are one of those photographers, and this, you're one of the few photographers that I know that are, you know, not only talented, obviously, as an artisan, but also you give back in many different ways, some that are public, some that are not so public. But you are one of those giving type photographers that are trying to make the world a better place. Right. So in one of those efforts, and I think one of the ways that we first came in contact was through your Help Portraits initiative. And I think it was going really good a couple of years ago when we first talked about it. So I want to check in with you and see where it is now. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going good. I mean, we still have photographers all over the world participating. We have groups in South Africa that literally do it almost weekly. I mean, they do it all the time. But it's hard. I mean, if I'm being honest, it's hard because there's basically me and one other guy that run it, and we run it after hours, after work, after children, you know, in the background of everything we're doing. And there's no money involved. I mean, I've never made a penny, and I don't ever want to make a penny on it. And so, yeah, it's a volunteer movement. And so it always ran up in December, and that's kind of our worldwide event. And this December we'll be doing it again, obviously. And so, man, but every time I do it, I just did an event a couple weeks ago in Alabama for women who were just out of prison or still in prison. And it's like, you know, I get tired and I get exhausted because it's a lot of work. But then we do an event and you see women crying because they've gotten their hair and makeup done for the first time in their lives. And you're just reminded once again, you know, what really matters and how special and meaningful photography and, you know, the hair makeup process can really be. So,
yeah. Well, for the folks that may not have heard of Help Portrait yet, so give us just the, you know, the founder's elevator pitch of what the organization is.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's just the idea of finding people in need, doing a photo shoot for them. And when we say photo shoot, we mean the whole deal, the lighting, the hair, the makeup, you know, full glam makeover. And we take their pictures and we print them on the spot and give them to them so that they can have that as a gift and go get a job as a with their headshot or send it to family, whatever they want to do. But the idea is just to use your gifts to give as a gift, you know, to give away and to help people in need. And so we've done it now in over 70 countries. We've done it in every American state. We've done well over 300,000 portraits to date. And so, it's just a viral movement, if you will.
Yeah, that's amazing. Congratulations on that, man. So it's an inspiration to what you're doing there. One of the other things that's an inspiration is you're what was the term someone used once? A photopreneur, right? So you're a photographer, but you're also an entrepreneur. You know how people like to label people, right? So
yep, exactly.
One of your new labels, along with being, you know, one of the top social photographers, is you're a photopreneur. And one of the ways that manifests is your OK Do This app, mm-hmm. right? So it's an iOS app right now. Is it iOS and Android or just iOS?
iOS, and of course we're working on Android and trying to get there as soon as we can. But if you've ever developed an app, you know how hard it is to do it at once. You know, there's not like a magical button where it's like convert to Android. You know,
what you can't like save as Android. Come on,
I know, right? Seriously, yeah, it's you know it's starting over. So
so what is it? What is OK Do This? I've played with the app and you gave me a you know a nice introduction to it a couple days ago. But it you know is it. It's kind of a photo sharing site slash app, right? Much like Instagram, but not Instagram. So give us the overview.
Well, it's all about ideas. You know, I realized a few years ago people need and want more ideas. I think in our daily photo habits, we tend to photograph the same things, whether that's, you know, shooting the same textured walls or shooting selfies or shooting coffee cups or sunsets. You know, like there's always these habits. You just kind of get in the same rut or you look at the same stuff and reproduce it. So, OK Do This is all about ideas. And every user on the app can add or upload their own ideas and then watch as their friends and family and followers do those ideas. And so it's kind of like super powered hashtags. You know, you can upload your own idea, but you always get credit for it. I mean, it always stays under your username and you can watch it for forever and see how people engage with your content. So
give me an example of an idea that has been successful on the network.
Yeah, my most popular, we call the ideas do's, and we called them that because ideas are something you get up and you go do, you know, and so so my most popular do is one I made called fill the frame with a circle, any circle, and it's been done over 3,000 times, and it's fascinating to see how people translate that very simple thing, you know, and then a guy made one called story portraits, shoot a portrait of somebody and tell their story because everybody has one, and it's been just super inspiring to read the stories about people's friends and families, you know, from dying loved ones in the hospital to grandparents to all kinds of stuff, you know. So, and then I made one called a weight loss before and after, and people are showing their results from losing weight. I mean, there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands of ideas in the app, and we have all these different categories. So in a way, it's also like Pinterest because we have fashion and cars and selfies and you name it, professional photography, sports, kids. And so you can go under any category and look for ideas. And, you know, a lot of haters in the beginning are like, why would I go use other people's ideas? It's just creating more homogeny and, you know, everybody's looking the same. But it's actually been quite the opposite. We've realized that it really celebrates the individuality of everybody because everybody has a different spin on the same ideas. And so before you judge a book by its cover, you know, it's good to go in and check it out for yourself. It's been amazing.
So playing with that app, you know, going through the onboarding process, by the way, very slick. You know, you download it and there's a little walkthrough. And at the end of the walkthrough, there's a, do your first do, take a photo of your feet, you know, you know, just to get your feet wet, so to speak, in playing with the app. I think that was brilliant. So very well done.
Yeah, we've got an amazing team here in Nashville. Everybody's local and it's a super talented team. But yeah, we wanted to start with a first do that was just easy and obvious. You know, we didn't want to do something that was too challenging or, you know, we wanted to make it easy for people to get on board. So yeah, everybody can take a picture of their feet really quick, you know.
Thanks. So what's the goal for this? And when you're speaking in the plural, right? So you just said there's a team behind it. Is this part of your company or are you part of another company that's developing this? How does that flow on the back end work?
OK Do This is its own company. I've got two partners and then there's several guys working for OK Do This full time. So we have a good team put together. And like I said, it's all Nashville based. And yeah, we're just cruising, trying to make it as amazing as an app as it can be. And, you know, we're not really trying to compete with Instagram. I mean, I guess we are, but it's not like one or the other. I mean, I think Instagram is such a daily fabric, part of the fabric of our lives. I mean, every day it's just what you go to, you know, so we're trying to be in addition to, I mean, some people do use OKDoThis instead of Instagram, and that's fine. But, you know, we just thought there's a lot kind of missing from the Instagram experience, and we just wanted to make it all about ideas. And yeah. So it's been beautiful to see how people are utilizing it. And I love how addicted people get. I mean, that's the most common word we see is the addiction. You know, people just can't stop, can't put it down. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah. And then the other piece that photographers would say that are listening to this, because we mentioned Instagram, and we talk about Instagram on the show a lot, specifically in terms of their terms of service, right? So, yeah. You know, and people are a lot of, and it's true with Instagram and Facebook, you upload images to the service and you don't know if you really own that image anymore.
Right.
You know, so
right.
How, what's your positioning for OKDoThis for the images that are in the catalog there?
I forget our exact wording, but that was as a photographer, that was a massive, massive concern for me to get that right from day one. And we did get it right, but I'm the worst with like actual legal wording. But yeah, I mean, you own your images. I do know that. We don't own your images, so I can guarantee you that. But I forget the exact legal verbiage we put in there. But I mean, I can't see Instagram ever actually selling an image. I mean, and neither would we. I mean, I know a photographer that can go shoot stuff if we need images, you know. So yeah, I mean, we have no interest in buying, but there are some tricky, you know, wording things you have to put in there to make sure you can actually have an app, you know. So yeah. That's just part of the process.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people are worried about, and this has never happened, but you know, based on say Facebook's or Instagram's terms of service, it could happen. They could flick a switch, presumably, and turn into a stock photography network selling all of these images that are neatly sitting in their database and make some money off of them, which would probably destroy their business if they did that. But just knowing that that could happen is probably, you know, is driving a lot of fear here.
I mean, I guess you're right. I guess that could happen. But like you said, I doubt it would. I mean, that would be a death sentence for them if they did that, you know.
Can you imagine? All right. Let's move on. So OKDoThis, help portrait. I want to talk about you as a photographer, starting with some of the gear that you used. And then I want to dive into a little discussion about, you know, sort of the behind the scene, SEEN, you know, regarding your celebrity work there. So when you're out there, you know, the question that all photographers, mostly amateur photographers, would know when they meet you, I'm sure, is, hey, Jeremy, what are you shooting with? You know, how do you get those fantastic images so I can make the same images if I buy your gear? You know,
right? Yeah.
So what's in your bag, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, I just released literally like 3 days ago a full toolkit, because you're right, I do get asked those questions all the time. I mean, every day.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell like this most powerful story, this heart-wrenching story, and I'm like near tears, and it's this really powerful thing. And then sure enough, somebody's like, that's awesome, but what lens did you use? You know, it's like, really? Did you hear anything I just said? You know, like other photographers, they don't care. They just want to know what gear you used. Yeah. I mean, It's a really sad state of affairs, but I guess, you know, I guess I understand people just want to know the gear. So I actually made a full book, literally answering all those questions, every lens, every camera. I'm a Canon shooter, you know, so I've got all my Canon gear in there. I've got my Fujifilm cameras, you know, but it's all there. It's on my website, jeremycoward.com. It's free, so people can download it and check it out. It's 50 pages of just geeky gear, you know.
So you went through and answered, you're like, you know what, I'm gonna answer this one more time, and I'm gonna do it in print, and I'm gonna answer every conceivable question. That way my answer to people will be a URL. That's great. So exactly. When did you put that up?
Man, just like 3 days ago, and it's already been downloaded a few thousand times. Oh, I mean, it's incredible. And so, in fact, I looked at the link today, and it was literally like over 3,500 downloads, you know. So,
that's crazy. Awesome. Well, I mean, you know, and it's a testament that people actually really want to know what you're using. Yeah. So in that PDF, you go into lighting and cameras and software and everything, right?
literally everything. I've still got, I forgot a few things, but yeah, I mean, I'm trying to put in everything down to the little geeky software tools I used and which social networks and why I use which social networks, all the little secret tools and gadgets I use. It's just fun to share. You know, I used to be one of those photographers that didn't share because somebody might steal my secrets, but now I don't care anymore. I mean, no one's ever going to become you. No one's ever going to become me. Like, we're all individuals, and you know, I've just found much more joy in being open and sharing. I mean, it's had a lot more reward than being secret and quiet about everything you ever did. So it's a good thing.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's a nuance, you know, and I agree with you. I know some photographers and people in general that are very like, hey, don't look at my marbles because it took me years to figure all this stuff out. Why am I going to just give it to you? You know, and I'm in the same boat with you. If people ask me anything, you know, hey, I'm happy to tell you because you can replicate my entire life down to, you know, what car I drive if you want, but you're never going to be me, right? So you're the wild card in any kind of mix. So, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about the, so we talk about your gear and what, by the way, is there a direct URL for people to go to get that PDF?
Yeah, it's a pop-up window on the homepage of my website. So okay. jeremycoward.com. Yeah, they can grab it there.
Okay. Awesome. Perfect. All right. So let's talk a little bit about, so we talked about gear and, you know, the sort of the social things and the photopreneur stuff. So let's talk about the actual act of working with these celebrities, right? So first of all, I'm looking behind you there. You have a physical studio, right, that people can come into. A lot of photographers don't, you know, they're like, you know what, the studio's over, I'm all in the cloud, you know. So how is that working? Do you find it necessary 100% to have a physical studio?
Yeah, for me, I do. I mean, I'm obviously not shooting in it every day. I'm not the type of photographer that shoots families and babies and kids those are everyday shooters where, you know, I probably shoot 5 to 7, 8 times a month. And so, and a lot of those shoots, I do use my studio and we rent out my studio to other businesses. And so the studio gets used not every day, but quite a bit. And, I enjoy having a studio cause it just allows me a space to create anytime I want. You know, I'll shoot friends and family in the studio, but yeah, I mean, celebrities are in here all the time. Last week I had a huge country act called Florida Georgia Line. They were in the studio last week. And so, yeah, I use it quite a bit.
So then talk about just sort of the flow, not so much around using the studio itself, but just, you know, demystify the whole celebrity process, you know? So I'm curious of how you are, I'm sure obviously through talent, but what was the flow of ascension from becoming, you know, Jeremy, and I know you own a design firm, right? So Jeremy, the design firm owner operator to shooting Britney Spears, you know, how does that happen? You know?
Well, I'm in Nashville. I'm in Music City. And so all of my friends here are all in the music industry. And so literally my roommates in college, my best friends in college, they're all famous musicians now. And so we all kind of came up together. I would shoot my friends. My friends would get signed to labels. The labels would start hiring me to design their stuff. Uh-huh. And digital photography came around. So I started shooting my friends as well. Then the labels would have me shoot and design the records for my friends. And then I beat this big Hollywood agent for a job one time, and she was like, "Well, who is this Nashville kid that's beating me out?" And so she called me and was like, "Hey, I'd love to represent you." And so we signed a deal, and shortly after that, I was in LA shooting Sting, and then the rest was like, you know, just tons of celebrities, and it's been a wild ride ever since. But yeah, that was kind of how it worked.
That's crazy. And now you're a celebrity yourself. So that's, you know,
I don't think of it as that way. I mean, I'm, you know, there's lots of us that are known in our industry, but we're still in the big picture. We're still, you know, small fries.
But. Yeah. But I would argue that on Twitter, or Google Plus, you're over 1 million followers there, you know, so 1 million people can't be wrong, Jeremy.
Yeah. But, but no one uses that. No one uses Google Plus. That's the problem.
So you have a million ghosts in your ghost town.
Right? I have a million ghosts following me on Google. Yeah.
That's awesome. See, that should be the theme of a piece of art that you put together. Yeah. A bunch of ghosts. Cool. That's awesome. Okay, so behind the scene, like, just quickly, you know, you have, you know, insert photographer subject or subject name here, and it's a celebrity. What's the flow? You get a call from your agent that says, hey, you know, X celebrity needs a shot for this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. What happens after that? I mean, is it, do you bill them? Do you take a deposit? Then you go meet them and you shoot them? You know, what's, demystify that. How does it work?
Yeah, it's always different. I mean, I don't have an agent anymore, by the way. I left my agent a year ago, so I operate fully on my own. But yeah, basically they call us, and it's usually their management or record label or somebody, and they say, hey, we've got this artist and they need this. And then we discuss creative direction. I don't have a rate, and so we always find out what their budget is, which makes life a lot easier. And so we say, what's your budget? And then we crunch the numbers from there and find out what their needs are. Like, do they want to own the shoot? Do they want to own the rights? How many looks are they going for? How many setups? You know, how many locations? Do they need hair and makeup? Do they want props? Do I need to rent gear? You know, we start just figuring out what all those details are going to look like. And location is usually the hardest part, is like figuring out, you know, where you're going to shoot. Yeah. And then we take their budget and we send back an estimate with the numbers, you know, my creative fee, but then the numbers for hair, makeup, props, location, location fee, location permit, rental gear, assistance, catering. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, shoots get quite expensive in that regard. And then they approve the estimate, and we go from there and do the shoot. So
okay. So, and then presumably you take the shots back into Lightroom, do post processing and all that. Are you doing all the post processing yourself, or do you have folks that do that for you?
I have a massive team overseas. I'm just kidding. Yeah,
I have people. So, they're ghosts. Yeah.
No, I do it all myself. I do all the raw processing myself. I'm very peculiar about tones and color and vibe and all that. I do outsource some skin retouching, just mainly because I don't have the time or the patience for it. I mean, to zoom into somebody's face at 1,000% for hours on end just is not up my alley. And plus, it's not my skill set. And there's some retouchers that are really amazing with skin. And so, but generally, I dial in the vibe, the color. I perfect the image. And then for the final skin retouching, I'll usually outsource that part.
Very cool. Very cool. So, and then how are you delivering the finals to the client, or how does the proofing flow work? Do you show them a bunch of unretouched images and then let them pick the ones that you're going to put some attention to, or do you go through and do kind of a first pass and put your best ones up there, then they pick their best from those?
Well, I show them the whole gallery, like literally every, I mean, I delete the obviously bad ones, the eyes closed, the bad exposures, anything that's obviously a kill shot, I go ahead and kill it. But then that's usually like maybe 1% of the shoot. So I'm showing them 98-99% of the photos we took. And then, I'll upload an online gallery. And then they go through and pick their favorites. And then they'll send me, and those are all processed with color, and pretty much everything's pretty much final without the retouching the skin work. And so
They're not straight out of camera at that point. They've been massaged a little bit to make them look good, but not to final. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be impossible to retouch every shot. So yeah, we just show them the roughs, and then they come back and say, these are the ones, and then we'll retouch those.
Got it. And then what are you using for the proofing, the online proofing? You have a home-built solution, or are you using a service?
Yeah, I'm still always kind of trying to figure out what my final solution is. I've got a home-built solution on my server. I'll export a gallery through Lightroom or Capture One Pro. I've used DF Studio a lot, which is a super powerful system. I've been using PixieSet here lately, and so Yeah, and I kind of like them all. It depends on the client because different galleries impress different types of clients. And
right,
so,
right.
Yeah, it depends on the job. But yeah, I tend to bounce through a few different options.
That's cool. That's another interesting piece. I mean, the two pieces I pulled out of that is the no budget piece at the beginning. Right. So, and a lot of people are like, because I've seen that game, right? Yeah, I've been on both sides of it, corporate hiring photographers and a photographer being hired by a corporation or, you know, an individual, whatever. And you get to the money piece of it, and it's always that game of chicken. Right. So it's what's your budget? Well, how much do you charge? Well, what's your budget? Well, how much do you charge? And no one wants to say a number first. But is that different in the celebrity kind of echelon there where they're okay with telling you the number?
Yeah, it's pretty normal. I'd say 9 times out of 10, we just say we don't have a rate. Literally, what is your budget? And they always know what they have to spend. Everybody knows what their budget is. And sometimes we just say no. It's like sometimes it is too low. But generally, I kind of understand that, you know, if it's an indie musician, if they are starting out, they're going to have a very low budget. You know, if it's an editorial magazine, they're going to have a really low budget. If it's a huge label, I know where those numbers should be. And so you kind of, after a while, you get to know, really both sides get to know where the numbers should be. So it gets easier and easier for sure.
Yeah. 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 I mean, do you, as part of the evaluation factor, look at it as, okay, they have a low budget, but this is a shoot that I really want to do and will look good in my portfolio, or this is an up and coming artist, so it would make sense for us promotion wise to be associated with this artist, so we're going to do it at a really reduced rate or for free or for something like that. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, of course. I do. You know, there are artists that either I really want to work with because I love their music, and sometimes you just need to do jobs for creative reasons, not for monetary reasons. And so, yeah, I do that kind of stuff all the time. There's lots of artists that couldn't afford me, but I decided to work with them anyway. And it's hard because you don't want to do that too much, because the more you just give away your work, the more you're devaluing yourself and the rest of the industry for that matter.
Yeah.
And so I think you just have to be really clear and upfront. It's like, okay, I'll do you this favor once, but you got to understand that I'm really bending over backwards. I'm charging less, but next time we do a shoot, like, you're going to have to pay my full rate. You know, so I think you have to be really clear in that kind of language when you're talking to people, so you're not devaluing yourself. You know, I think a lot of times kids they're single and they're young and they're like, man, I'll take any kind of money. But it's like one day when you're older and you've got a wife and a house and mortgage and kids after that, like, you're going to really regret your low prices, you know?
Yeah. One way I talk to people on the marketing side of how to, you know, because you're talking about price perception and, you know, all that stuff. So is to price your work high. You know, and even for friends and family that you want to shoot for free, because that's, you know, for a lot of advanced amateurs or semi-pros or whatever, that's what happens. They become known as the photographer in the family, and then they get hit up all the time, and it's hard to charge your family, you know, or you don't want to charge your family, but you then at the same time, you don't want to be devalued. So what I sort of counsel people in doing is to still invoice them, you know, and show them, you know, this is what my normal clients pay, but here's my friends and family discount, which brings it down to zero. So they can see that big number on there, but you discounted to zero. So now it's real. This guy just gave me $2,000 or whatever.
And I that's great advice. I'll steal that from you, because I definitely think that's a better approach, and that's brilliant. That's great.
Yeah. And then, like, even for those small bands or for smaller clients that you want to shoot, but they have little budget, you could still charge, show that, okay, normally we charge this much for these services, but I'm discounting it by 50% or by whatever percent so that it fits your budget, you know, because I want to work with you, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's great. I think all photographers should follow that theory. It's awesome.
So Jeremy, let's talk quickly about that on the output side of things. So you know, I was looking at your website, and I know you have a print portfolio, which is really well done. Congratulations on that. So you're still doing print, though. You know, you're doing print and putting stuff on the wall and all that. And a lot of photographers would say, hey, you know what? That era is over. You know, right. We've got OK Do This. We've got Instagram. We've got, you know, all these different sites to share our images with a million people with a click of a button. Why put ink on paper? So what's your thoughts process behind that?
There's a lot of things. Number one, I think a print will always be more beautiful than an image on a screen. I mean, I work with Epson and I've got all their printers and all their paper. So it's just, there's nothing like a huge print coming off a printer and seeing your image, you know, being able to physically hold your artwork. And so, but in the commercial world, at least in my industry, you know, the way it works is still not all the time, but a lot of times they're all sitting in a conference room together with all these portfolios. Mm-hmm. And that's much easier than everybody gather around the monitor and huddle around and let's look at one website at a time. Yeah. You know, they want to be sitting in this big room with all the portfolios spread out on a table. And so, yeah, I think it's not like mandatory, but it's just helpful. I mean, they really appreciate it if you can ship them a portfolio for their big meeting. And sometimes they don't, but when they do, you want to be ready and have those prints available.
Yeah, and it will make you stand out in the crowd from the folks that just have online, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, something about that tactile feel, but something that you can't do in print, obviously, is video. And we're seeing a lot of video and capabilities come up in these cameras, like the Panasonic GH4 with 4K, the Sony A7S with ultra low light sensitivity, shooting full frame and outputting 4K. How does this stuff affect you on your side? Because, you know, from the surface, it would seem like, hey, Jeremy's doing entertainment stuff, music. Of course, motion and all that stuff is a logical evolution. Is it?
Yeah. I think for me, at least, it feels like a few years ago, like everybody was jumping into video because we could and because mm-hmm. the cameras were there. But I have directed a few music videos, but ultimately I'm just not like, there's not like that burning passion in me for video. Mm-hmm. I do love filmmaking. I love movies, obviously, but like I don't watch music videos. I don't really, I mean, I've got some friends doing music videos and they're killing it and they're doing amazing work. But for me, it's not like a passion. And so I don't want to get into it just because everybody else is. But, you know, maybe one day it would have to be an idea that really drives me into video versus just pursuing it because I'm supposed to. And so at this point, I'm not really doing it. And I have no idea if I will. Right now, I'm doing so many other things that, you know, video is pretty low on my radar. But it is amazing what all the cameras can do now and what they're capable of. So
Yeah, it is crazy. One of the other things that they're capable of are those, at least outside of the camera, we're seeing a lot more of these cinemagraphs. You've seen these, right? These still photos with lots of splash of motion, like, you know, it looks like a still photo, but the person's eyes are blinking or the hair is blowing and everything else is still. What do you think of that? I mean, is that something that's going to take hold and, you know, it might become something that celebrities request in the future?
I don't think so. I mean, I think when the first time I saw it, I mean, my mind was blown. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I even showed them in my workshops as like a new thing that's taken off. But I definitely see that as a more gimmicky kind of thing. I mean, it's like it took off and it blew up and then a bunch of people did it. Now it just feels like, oh, that's a cool trick and a cool thing to do, but it doesn't seem like it would ever be a mainstream part of what we do, you know. But I do think it's really fascinating. Whoever thought of it first needs to be greatly recognized, because it really is brilliant for sure.
It's definitely jarring when you see it, and it's like, and there's so many cool things that you could do. And like I was saying before, you know, the convergence of this stuff is the tools are getting there for us to do these cool things, and then the distribution networks are there for us to show these things to people where, you know, it wasn't really there before. So on the video side, Jeremy, so, you know, like I was mentioning the 4K, a lot of these cameras are starting to get 4K capabilities. And one of the things that has got a lot of photographers excited is the idea of shooting video for a still photography session and then exporting frames of that video, you know, 4K, which is basically an 8 megapixel still to use as a regular still, not even a cinemagraph, but as a still. Is that something that could excite you in the future or change your workflow, or what do you think?
I think that's an exciting, I would love to do it. I can never see myself doing it like for every shoot. It's mm-hmm. just not realistic, but yeah, for some fashion stuff or some more experimental work, I could definitely see myself, doing some of that for sure. I'd love to try. I mean, I know it's already been done quite a bit, but yeah, I mean, I'm already like envisioning a really dark fashion shoot where you have girls, you know, dancing around on some kind of cool dress and you're just taking stills from it. Yeah, I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. So much stuff to talk about. I know you have a lot of stuff to do today, so I want to be respectful of your time. But let's sort of wrap this up with what's coming next for Jeremy. What's next for Help Portrait? What's next for Okay Do This? You know, I know you're probably on the road again tomorrow, going somewhere. What's happening in your world?
Man, there's a lot of photo shoots right now. It's good to be a working photographer. I mean, it's always up and down. So I'm pretty committed right now this month to photo shoots. I'm okay. Do this, we're rocking. I mean, there's just amazing. We got Upload from the Web coming, so that's exciting. But yeah, the team is rocking, man. They're uploading adding new features all the time. I'm actually about to start teaching a lot more, which sounds crazy to me because I mean I've taught a lot in my career, but it's never been like a big like passion per se. It's just been like, yeah, I enjoy helping people here and there, but I want to keep shooting, and obviously I will keep shooting, but all of a sudden lately I'm having a lot more ideas on how to help people and what to teach, and so I'm definitely exploring that, and I'm open to doing that more. And a lot of people might think because it's because work is drying up, but work isn't drying up whatsoever. I've just got a new passion for it. So people should definitely join my mailing list because that's where all of that information will start heading out to on my website. And so yeah, more teaching coming soon. Obviously, we'll be ramping up for Help Portrait this fall. Super excited about that. I'm forgetting stuff. I've got doing some art videos. I don't know if you've seen my abstract.
I have. Yeah. I've seen that. I've seen one of those. Yeah. The remix and bringing different pieces of art in. Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually created a 20-minute talk. I've been doing it on several conferences, and literally as I stand on stage, every single word I say from the stage is being drawn on the screen in real time. So as I'm talking at the full speed of talking, you're seeing every little word with images attached being illustrated on the screen. I've never seen or heard of it being done before, but it was an idea I had, and I've been doing it, and it is crazy. I mean, it's a crazy process. And so I'm about to release here soon one of those videos online for the first time, so that's exciting.
Oh, I want to see that. That sounds amazing. That sounds really crazy. I need to see that right now. Send that over to me.
Yeah, it literally took me 4 days to illustrate in Photoshop. And so then I would have to fast forward that little sentence or those words to the amount of time that it took me to say it. And so, like, you know, each Photoshop segment would be like 3.5 seconds, 4.8 seconds, 10.3 seconds. Like, and I would have to chop that up times 20 minutes. And in the end, you have this crazy illustration that details out my life story. And so yeah, I'm excited to get that online here pretty soon.
See, I mean, and that's why you're one of the seven most influential photographers socially out there, because you are, I talk to a lot of photographers, and a lot of photographers, you know, and they're all awesome, but they're awesome in different ways. And when I talk to you, I hear you're a passionate artist that's pushing different ways of creating art and getting the message out there and helping people at the same time and shooting, and all while, you know, sipping cocktails with celebrities. So that is awesome.
That's a nice compliment. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Cool, man. Well, thanks a lot for coming on. I appreciate it, and have a good rest of your week and weekend.
All right. Thank you. You too, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right. See ya.